everybody. Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast with continued coverage of the CUNA Lending Council Conference. And in this clip, we have CUNA's chief economist, Mike Schenk, talking again about the economic outlook, his keynote presentation for the conference, for the final day of the conference. And in this particular clip, he talks about unemployment and how there's a bit of good news on the horizon. So check it out.
Now, as I said earlier, the unemployment and labor market situation actually improved a lot faster than we anticipated when we viewed the crisis at the beginning of the crisis. So the unemployment rate topped out at about 15%. It improved in a fairly short period of time in a very dramatic way. So from about almost 15% unemployment in April, we've declined as economies opened to an unemployment rate in the aggregate of about 8% at the end of September. This is good news, generally speaking, but there are some things that we're concerned about that underlie these numbers that lead us to conclude that labor market health is not summarized very appropriately in this data. So we know, for example, from the narrative in the release from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, that the adjusted rate of unemployment is higher than 7.9%. It was almost a half a percentage point higher based on the responses to the survey research that the Labor Department does. So the way that the questions are phrased, BLS says that some people that are unemployed or that aren't being counted as unemployed are answering those questions in a way that makes them think that they ought to really be part of those that we're counting as unemployed. So the adjusted rate at the moment is about 8.4% overall, not 7.9%. The other thing that makes these numbers look a little bit better than they otherwise would look is that the labor force participation rate has declined. It's sitting at 61.4%, down 2 full percentage points since the beginning of the crisis. It was 63.4%. in February of this year. Third, we've seen a really dramatic increase in the number of folks that say that they're permanently unemployed. That's gone up by 30%. There's almost 4 million folks at the moment that are telling BLS researchers that they're permanently unemployed. Essentially, they don't have a job to come back to. So this is really, I think, an indication that these unemployment numbers will not improve dramatically and as strongly as we see here over the course of the last 6 months or so looking forward. So even if we weren't seeing this surge in COVID cases, if the economy was open, there would be stickiness to these numbers on the downside. And that, of course, concerns us in a really big way. And then finally, we've seen a big increase in part-time temporary workers related to the census about 500,000 folks in this data that are affecting these numbers as well. If we abstract from this and look more closely at the data, this gives you a sense for why we're really concerned. This is data going back all the way to 1960, and it's basically showing you that in previous economic downturns, the U.S. economy has shed somewhere between 3.5% of the jobs that were outstanding at the beginning of each successive downturn, and that the amount of time that it takes those jobs to come back varies from, on the short end, about 12 months, almost an entire year, to almost 4 years, almost 48 months overall. So this is the last six or so downturns coming into the Great Recession. This is what happened in the Great Recession. Lost 6% of the jobs that were outstanding at the beginning of that downturn, and it took over 6 years to get those jobs back. And this is what we're going through at the moment. We lost way more than 6% of the jobs. And at the moment, we're still at a position where more than 6% of the jobs are gone, essentially. And as I say, a big chunk of those jobs that are gone are permanently gone, according to the folks who held them in the past. Now, I want you to look closely at the y-axis on this graphic. I'm going to adjust it here and give you a different perspective on the data that we're looking at. And one of the reasons that we're really concerned about labor market health going forward and the overall health of average workers going forward. So here's the adjustment. And now I'm going to add to this graphic folks that are in the leisure and hospitality industry. Okay, so this would be hotels and restaurants, theme parks, that kind of thing, where the disruption was magnified. Almost half of the folks that were employed in leisure and hospitality lost their jobs as the economy shut down. And again, as we look at the data today, there still is a big disconnect between employment in that segment of the economy, in that segment of the labor market, and what everybody else is experiencing. This is a big deal going forward. These are folks that are, you know, from an economic perspective, on the lower rungs of the economic ladder, generally speaking, not exclusively, but generally speaking, they tend to earn less money than other workers, obviously. And so it's really the most fragile economically and financially folks that are being affected the worst in this downturn, and because of that, are suffering more than they would in a normal economic dislocation. This next table has a lot of data in it. I'm not going into it, but you can see that first line of data, leisure and hospitality, puts everything into perspective. What I've done here, and this is in the handout materials, again, I'm not going to go through all the data, but essentially what I've done is I've looked here at the Bureau of Labor Statistics data by industrial sector, and I've organized this data by the average hourly earnings of the folks that are employed in each one of those areas of the economy. And it gives you a sense for what I've just said. The dislocations are obvious, and especially so for folks that can least afford to be disrupted. And as we look back historically, it's really important, as I said, it's unprecedented that this sort of a dislocation is obvious. You can see that in the data here, basically in the bottom right-hand corner. This is showing you four economic downturns, and essentially shows you that those folks in the lowest earnings quartile are suffering the most. And so it's again just sort of highlighting what I've just showed you. And so this is a big deal. This is not going to be short and sweet for a lot of people, for millions of folks that were previously employed. And what that means, I think, when all is said and done, is that even though we're talking about 15% as a sort of a peak unemployment rate, the dislocation really is going to be more dramatic from a personal level. We know we have a lot of academic data that shows that just being unemployed for a short period of time has dramatic effects on people. It has dramatic effects, measurable and significant effects, and they're more significant the longer people are unemployed, on financial health, on physical health, on mental health, on things like crime rates, substance abuse rates, and things like domestic violence rates. All of those socioeconomic dislocations will become more pronounced going forward as more and more people are disrupted for a longer period of time. And so, you know, we are really concerned about those effects becoming a lot more obvious as we go forward. As you know, fiscal stimulus, the combination of PPP, rich unemployment benefits, and $1,200 on average checks to average consumers had an incredible effect on overall economic activity and on people's health generally. It helped to maintain that financial health through the crisis. And as a matter of fact, the University of Wisconsin or the University of Chicago did a study that basically showed that two-thirds of consumers essentially were making more during the teeth of the COVID-19 downturn than they were prior to the downturn, essentially because of those rich unemployment benefits and the other forms of fiscal stimulus. That's all gone. We know that people need more of it. We know that businesses need more of it. It's obvious to everybody on both sides of the aisle, and it's time for politicians to stop playing politics with average consumers, to get that fiscal stimulus out there sooner rather than later, and in a, I think, a more significant rather than less significant way. That's the only thing that's going to soften the blow here. If we have to wait until after the inauguration, you know, who knows? I don't know who the president is at the moment, but assuming we have to wait till after the inauguration to get fiscal stimulus, it's going to be a bad thing all the way around. So we do think, again, based on what's happening with the virus, that economic activity is going to slow pretty dramatically. And then by extension, what happens with fiscal stimulus is going to either soften that blow or make it more pronounced going forward. In any case, we believe that the dislocations that we were afraid of in 2020 will become more obvious in 2021, even if we do get that fiscal stimulus sooner, and it is pretty dramatic. So let me just say, too, that you should recognize that this is not simply trade association hacks that have this point of view. This is a widely perceived course for the economy going forward. This is data here from the IRS, basically, where people are looking at, you know, whether or not the IRS is going to have wage tax receipts and when those tax receipts come back. You can see, not as far as the eye can see, but way out into the future, the IRS is expecting significantly lower tax receipts based on this dislocation that I just described and the fact that it's likely to be longer term than most people anticipate. So a really big deal. Why do we think this is the case? It's not simply that a bunch of really vulnerable people on one end of the economic ladder or on the bottom of the economic ladder were severely disrupted. It has to do with the construction of the U.S. economy and the fact that of the roughly 8 million business establishments throughout the nation, almost 75% are operated by 10 or fewer full-time equivalent employees. That's a big deal. What it means is that the vast majority of U.S. businesses are small, independent, mom-and-pop, Main Street operations that are financially vulnerable. Smaller shops basically have, no matter what industry they're in, almost across the board, smaller shops have weaker balance sheets. They have weaker income statements. And that's a really big deal.
Thank you very much for that information, Mike. And stay tuned for more Conference of the CUNA Lending Conference here on CU Broadcast.